This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro. Sometimes it sounds like experts talk about risk of COVID-19 in black and white terms. Stay home or risk spreading the disease. As economies reopen and our circumstances change, many of you have asked about how to navigate life's gray areas. Our next two experts have written about the importance of getting guidance beyond an all-or-nothing approach. Julia Marcus is an epidemiologist and assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. Welcome, Dr. Marcus.
Thanks for having me.
And Emily Oster is a professor of economics at Brown University. She's the co-founder of ExplainCOVID.org. Thanks for joining us, Professor Oster.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with a listener question that gets at the heart of what both of you have written about. This is from Sopana in New York.
I see many people getting creative socializing while socially distancing. For example, groups meeting in a parking lot but staying in their cars. Kids have play dates where they stay outside and 6 feet apart. At the same time, I also see outrage from others who think this is dangerous. Can we socialize as long as we are 6 feet apart?
Dr. Marcus, you've written that an abstinence-only approach, like not socializing at all, won't work in the long term. Is there a way for people to socialize with a lower risk of spreading the coronavirus?
Absolutely. And it's actually great to hear that people are getting creative about this, because we're going to have to be creative if we're going to sustain this in the long term. And almost any socializing may come with some amount of risk, but there are definitely ways to keep that risk low. And the situation the listener is describing is fairly low risk because people are outdoors and they're at least 6 feet apart. And to reduce risk even more, people can wear masks and keep the number of people to a minimum. But it is unfortunate to hear about this outrage and shaming of people who are engaging in these relatively low risk activities. And I think that's a reason why it's so important that our prevention messaging shift from this abstinence-only approach to one that's more nuanced and acknowledges the spectrum of risk.
So, Professor Oster, from a risk assessment perspective, what factors would you encourage people to consider before they decide to socialize or allow their kids to socialize?
I mean, I think the one thing I would think about is just, like, how distant can you be? Can you actually achieve some kind of social distancing while you're doing this? And that's going to be easier with 8-year-olds who understand than with 2-year-olds who don't. And sort of similarly thinking about, you know, are there people in the group who are at risk for because of immune compromise or because they're elderly? But I think, you know, I completely agree with what Dr. Marcus said, that really seeing people get creative about this is going to be the way forward, because we cannot just stay in our houses all the time. People are not going to find that to be something they can achieve.
Well, there are many families, as you know, in which parents live in separate homes. And our next question is about that. It comes from Sarah in Oregon.
My question is about co-parenting schedules during the pandemic, where there isn't a closed household because the kids are traveling back and forth. Would a 2-week on, 2-week off schedule significantly decrease the risk of exposure?
Dr. Marcus, is there a way you would recommend Sarah lessens the risk of spreading the virus as her kids are going back and forth between her and their father's home?
It's reasonable to think that the longer the period of time is before the kids switch households, the lower the risk of transmission from one household to another. So, for example, let's say you're switching every 2 weeks. If someone gets exposed at the beginning of the 2-week period, they'd probably realize by the end of that first week that they had the virus because they would develop symptoms, and then they would avoid exposing the other household. On the other hand, if you're switching every few days, the risk of cross-household transmission is higher because there's a higher likelihood that someone is unknowingly infected but not yet symptomatic. And that's just the complications that we have to deal with a virus that, you know, where asymptomatic transmission is possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's interesting. Well, if you have a question for Dr. Marcus or Professor Oster, please send it to us at npr.org/nationalconversation, or you can share it on Twitter using the hashtag NPRConversation. Our next listener, Rebecca in Nevada, is struggling with a situation that I think will sound familiar to a lot of listeners. Her parents are on the East Coast, and her father has a degenerative condition. She wants to see him before his condition deteriorates.
At what point do you say, I just have to do it and there's some risk, but it's one that I'm willing to take? Or do you just keep waiting, knowing that we could continue to see upticks in this virus?
So, Professor Oster, how would you advise Rebecca to think about this?
I actually think she's thinking about it exactly the right way by framing it and saying, you know, how long am I willing to wait? Right? And sort of what is the alternative? And I think that there's this feeling of, we're just, if you're waiting and waiting and waiting, but you do need to ask, you know, am I willing to wait until, say, there's a vaccine? You know, am I willing to wait 18 months or 2 years? Or is that just not something I'm willing to do? And so I think the one thing I would encourage her to say is, you know, are you asking me, should I wait now or a month? In which case, those things may not look very different. And so I think really framing in terms of what you're waiting for.
That's helpful. Our next question comes from Jennifer in Nashville, who says she feels torn about sending her kids to summer camp.
I've signed my 6 and 8-year-old up for 2 weeks of camp in June and July. I've contacted the camp and they said that there will be more hand washing stations and the groups will be smaller. But is that enough? I just worry that the very concept of camp fun is all about togetherness and play. It's unclear to me that this is a safe choice for my kids right now.
So, Dr. Marcus, what precautions would you advise parents to consider in terms of whether they send their kids to summer camp and how to keep their kids safe once they're there?
There's not really an easy answer here, and maybe that's kind of the theme of these questions and answers. We know kids are at lower risk of developing serious complications from this virus, but we still have more to learn about that, and we know that they can be infected and transmit to other people in their household. The CDC did release some guidelines just yesterday to help summer camps determine if they're ready to reopen, including some of the things the listener mentioned, like promotion of hand hygiene and social distancing. And they have some other ideas like staggered scheduling or staggered drop-off. So I would suggest looking at the summer camp you're considering and, you know, seeing what they're doing to follow those guidelines and also looking at what's going on with community spread of the virus in your area. But that's, you know, it doesn't mean there's no risk, and it becomes a question about whether the benefits to your family of having your kids at camp outweigh the potential risk of exposure.
Professor Oster, could you speak to the listeners who may be thinking at this point, how could anyone even consider XYZ, whether that's sending their kids to summer camp or having a socially distanced play date or whatever the thing might be that is not zero risk, but people are just trying to moderate the risk?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I would often say to people is, you know, we're taking a lot of risks all the time that we may not be thinking about. And so I think some of this conversation has switched into a place where we're saying, you know, I would never admit any risk of the possibility that someone could get sick and die. But I think we might want to think about, well, actually, we're admitting that risk every day in a lot of the other choices that we make, which doesn't mean we should be callous or careless about what we're doing here. That's part of why we need to invest in these kind of social distancing and prevention measures. But I think to say that somehow we should treat this completely differently than we treat all other choices of this nature, I think that's not a very coherent way to see it.
All right, we're going to take a short pause, and when we return, we will have more with Dr. Julia Marcus of Harvard University and Professor Emily Oster of Brown, taking your questions about risk and the gray area between the black and white of stay home or spread COVID-19. We'll be right back.